From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. This hour, we are watching results from a number of states that could be decisive in the presidential election. And we know that you are following those results, too. So I want to let you know how we're going to handle the next couple of hours on this program. As always, things are fluid. And if there is anything decisive or a need to go to NPR national coverage, we will do that. If there are any statements made, we can take those live. But likely what we're looking at is data and vote counting coming from several states that will at least be somewhat telling. So here's the picture first, and then what we're going to do is we're going to have a conversation that is pertaining to the election this hour, but we'll keep our eyes on the results. Here's where things stand right now, because a lot just happened at the top of this hour. First of all, Nevada has a news conference, and they are getting ready to release the results of 150,000 outstanding ballots. In Nevada, six electoral votes matters. All of these states matter. Joe Biden has an elite of about 7,600 votes. 150,000 votes are going to be counted. John Ralston is the man on the ground in Nevada who seems to know everything. He says if you'd rather be on one side than the other in terms of likely outcome of that vote, the Biden campaign probably favored, but there's a lot of dynamics that could swing it. And so it's not a done deal. And we could get those results any minute now out of Nevada. It looks like we'll get complete results there. Not certain, but it looks like we will. Arizona, probably not until later tonight. That's taking longer. In Georgia, the margin is down to 14,000 total votes between Donald Trump leading with 14,000 votes as an advantage over Joe Biden. Here's what's left to count. About 50,000, 45,000 votes left. Joe Biden has a chance, given where those votes are coming from in Georgia, to overtake Donald Trump in Georgia, and that could happen today. The latest vote dump, the numbers dump, the latest one, came about 20 minutes ago. So there's a lot coming from Georgia hour by hour. There are lawsuits happening in Georgia and Pennsylvania and Michigan. 538 says what we're seeing is so far a series of lawsuits in which most of the time the judges on the ground have thrown them out, essentially said there's no standing and moved on here. So here's an example. The Trump campaign in Chatham County, Georgia, alleged mishandling of late arriving ballots. A judge took a look, listened to arguments, listened to evidence, and said there's no standing, threw it out. So there's a lot of that happening. It's happening in Pennsylvania, too. Pennsylvania, the margin is now 120,000 votes. And it looks like still several hundred thousand votes left to count. And those votes that are coming in favor Joe Biden about 3-1. He's getting about 75% of the votes that have come in by mail. So most of the smart analysts expect that Pennsylvania, unless something dramatic happens, will turn over comfortably to the Biden campaign sometime today, but we don't know when that would be. So there's a lot happening here. If Joe Biden wins Pennsylvania, he wins the election. If Joe Biden wins Arizona and Nevada, he wins the election. If Joe Biden wins Nevada and Georgia, he wins the election. So, or any combination more of, you know, if he wins three or four of those states, he wins the election. So a lot happening, and I know you're following it. So are we. You know me by now. I want to keep you informed, and I'm on it as minute by minute as I can. That's where we are, and I'll let you know if anything changes on that. Now, Donald Trump still feels, at least his team says, that they can pull this out. We're going to find out. Now, let me tell you what we're talking about here. Donald Trump appears to have done much better this election than he did in 2016 with Latinos, significantly better with Hispanic men, but better overall. And if this comes as a surprise, it probably shouldn't. Latino journalists have been chronicling the gradual growth in Latino conservatism and Republican registration in individual states like Florida, but also around the country. Writing for the LA Times, Gustavo Arellano says this, quote, "Lots of Latinos voted for Trump, and it should not be a surprise. No matter who ends up winning the presidential election, one thing is already clear, though. It's all the fault of Latino voters. We were supposed to be the phalanx in the war against Donald Trump, an immovable mass of multi-hued tribes hurtling like an unstoppable force to smash white supremacy in the name of democracy. Instead, too many of us broke ranks, too many vendidos, sellouts." That was the narrative pushed, at least during the programming of this crazy election when Trump seemed on the fast road to victory, by liberal pundits, Democratic operatives, and leftists aghast that Latinos didn't unanimously go for Joe Biden, never mind that he will end up winning the Latino vote in every state. The problem was that we didn't vote enough against a president who caged Central American children, referred to Mexicans as rapists, tossed paper towels to Puerto Ricans when they really needed electricity, and cavalierly dismisses the coronavirus as insignificant, even as this pandemic disproportionately affects Latinos. How could we possibly side with someone who despises us so much? The Trump haters howl. Well, very easily, it turns out. End quote. Arellano notes that Latino voters saved Texas for Trump and helped cement Florida in the GOP column. He adds that Trump's improvement from 2016 means that North Carolina and Georgia are coin flips instead of solidly Biden states. And he concludes, quote, I'm already seeing Democrats like a Scooby-Doo villain make excuses for why more Latinos didn't go for Scranton Joe. It's the fault of those pesky Cuban exiles. It's because too many Latinos assimilate. The rancor is especially real among the Latino left, who have spent the Trump years gleefully mocking their conservative cousins and now want to break up the concept of Latino altogether so they never have to be grouped together again, end quote. Well, many journalists, myself included, speak too monolithically when we discuss Latinos. We don't often get more specific. Do we mean Cuban Americans? Do we mean Puerto Ricans, immigrants from South America, who might have a strong distaste for anything that looks like socialism? Latinos, if we are going to speak monolithically, have been moving in a more culturally conservative direction in recent years, and the results from this week do not surprise those who've been paying attention. So let's talk about all of that and more. Our guests this hour include Anthony Planzinski-Figueroa, the founder of La Cumbre. Anthony, welcome back to the program.
Thanks for having me, Evan.
Also with us is Jose Pio, a member of Rochester City Council. Jose, welcome. Thanks for being with us. Oh, we're going to get Jose in a moment here. That's my fault. Peter Vasquez, a recent candidate for New York State Assembly, back with us now. Hi, Peter.
Hey, how you doing?
Very good. And Mercedes Vasquez Simmons, community organizer with the Latino Voter Protection Group. Mercedes, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
Let me ask all of you, Anthony, does the media speak too monolithically about Latinos, and does the media generally sort of lazily assume that Latinos vote one way or another?
Absolutely. I believe that Latinos are a very complex group. We're also culturally split in many different areas. You know, Puerto Ricans are not Mexicans, the Mexicans are not Puerto Ricans or Dominicans, and we all have different histories, cultures that are oftentimes lumped together into under the term Latino.
When it comes to how Latinos vote, Anthony, do some Democrats, and I'm trying not to speak too monolithically this hour, but I'm going to generalize, do some Democrats who sort of expressed surprise this week, have they taken for granted that, well, people of color vote for us? Was that too often happening?
I think there's a bit of that, and depending on where you are. And also, it's just uninformed hope. You have to actually address the voter. You have to address what's going on in the community, what their interests are, what is their tabletop issues, and make sure that they are focused on what they need. If you're not addressing those voter issues or those humanity issues, you're not going to get them to vote for you.
Mercedes, how do you see it?
I agree with Anthony. Since primaries, we've made it our objective to get all candidates to the Latino community to speak with them directly about matters that affect them. Unfortunately, not too many took us up on the on that offer, and sort of disappointed that occurred, but it didn't stop our momentum to bring awareness of what's happening and get the voters out.
Peter Vasquez, how do you see it?
I have to agree with Anthony and Mercedes. I mean, it's true. Candidates, regardless of their race, need to get out and talk to voters, regardless of their race, and meet them where they are so that policies can be created to help that community, as best as it's needed. And when they refer to Latinos, you're right. It is kind of like an overarching a term for all Hispanics, and there are many different cultures within that term. To define it. And as you see in this election, when we break them down, you look, the Cuban community by far has always made up a large portion of the more conservative votes.
Yeah, no question. And that was certainly true in Southeast Florida, where that stronghold made it essentially impossible for Joe Biden to overcome Donald Trump's lead statewide. And Peter, it sounds to me like you're in the camp of says this is no surprise to me. So if that's the case, Tell me a little bit more about the cultural conservatism you see, maybe in Cuban Americans, but also if you want to talk about Latinos sort of categorically, is there more cultural conservatism than, again, sort of detached observers might assume?
Yes, absolutely. And more so in the older Latino population, I believe. Our young people, my generation and newer, have seemed to have shifted from that conservative base or that conservative culture that really makes up all Latino races.
Peter, you're welcome to refer to you and me as young. I like that. Young generation. Mercedes. Oh, go ahead, Peter.
I was going to say, although I was just made a grandfather, but I haven't hit 50. So, yes, I'm going to stay in that.
Congratulations, by the way. Mercedes Vasquez-Simmons, when we saw especially the Cuban-American vote in Florida, you know, watching in real time, just watching social media, I did see quite a lot of how can this be, how can this be? And when I read writers like Gustavo Arellano, he points out, for example, that if you are a Cuban-American or if you're an immigrant from South America, you may have a real lack of affinity for anything that even looks like socialism. You know, the anti-socialismo signs are just about everywhere in some Latino communities, especially around Election Day. And that's not to say that the Democrats ran candidates this time around who are socialists, but certainly conservatives can sort of maybe make some hay with that. How significant do you see that issue, generally speaking, in the Latino community, the concern about socialism?
It's a great concern, but you have to go back to what their government was in Cuba and why they're so they're strong. But I think in Florida, you know, this was a tricky year for Florida because you saw an influx of Puerto Ricans that were greatly impacted by some of the decisions made by Trump. You know, the lack of response to Hurricane Maria, the lack of response to the earthquake. So that's why, I mean, Florida, and it continues to just amaze me as far as what's happening in Florida. To be quite honest, I thought it was going to turn into a blue state, but it didn't happen. So we continue to push that and make sure that we're getting the message out. I'm working with a couple national organizations, Latino organizations, just to address that matter.
Yeah, and I'll ask both Peter and Anthony same question, and I'll start with Peter and then I'll let Anthony jump in too. Peter, how much do you see the concern about socialism, given the history in Latin America, given, you know, history in Cuba? How significant is that issue?
You know, many of the it's very significant. I think it's very significant. I think that people like Luis Martinez, a very good friend of mine who came from Cuba, he saw, you know, what happened when they shifted to communism. I mean, he saw community policing and what it did to their community. He saw the big government that socialism brings, and he saw Cubans losing everything. And he was one of the lucky guys that was able to come over here and be educated. And he had told me that he made a promise when he was very young that he was going to work as hard as he can so that he can build himself to a point where he can serve as an influence to other Latinos, to other Hispanics throughout the United States, and really push that individual accountability and that focus back on our core culture of things like entrepreneurship.
Yeah. Anthony Planzinski-Figueroa, how do you see that question?
I think it's at the forefront of a lot of things, not just Cubans, but also we talked back to the Puerto Rican community and the fight on Puerto Rico about government assistance during the hurricane, government assistance after the earthquakes, and who is and who is not providing for these populations. And so I'm not shocked by the Cuban population in Florida that has been consistent over time, and they were mobilized. So the question is, were the other communities mobilized to get out to vote around this issue of socialism? And where do they fall in that department? And I think for a lot of Puerto Ricans, you know, socialism actually would be a good thing. And so depending on how they would fall.
So let me bring in Jose Pio, who's a member of Rochester City Council, who's on the line with us now, too. And first of all, Jose, thanks for making time for the program.
Absolutely. I appreciate the invite.
Well, and I'll let you make some sort of opening remarks, too, as we look at the landscape of maybe how the media, and I am firmly putting myself in this category, sometimes overgeneralizes or, you know, does the 30,000-foot view of quote-unquote Latino communities and then maybe expresses surprise when election results say, hey, Donald Trump did better this time around, especially with Latino men, but also with Latinos as a category overall. And, you know, I mean, for the people who are maybe grappling with that, what are your first thoughts about what you're seeing this week?
No, absolutely, and I appreciate the conversation being had about this. I'm seeing that, you know, there's a broad stroke being painted about Latinos and generalizing them all under kind of one category when we are just so vastly different, even within our own communities. You know, I consider myself a blue dog Democrat. I'm Puerto Rican, and I don't always agree with my fellow Puerto Ricans. Like me and Anthony, we're friends. Me and Anthony don't agree on everything, but we talk about everything. You know what I mean? These are things that conversations need to be had about this stuff instead of saying, Latinos, you should have done this, or you should have showed up for this person because this is why. It's why did you show up for this person? Why did you vote for this person over the other? You know, let's ask them, you know, what drove you? Because fear is a big driver. Fear is a very hefty driver in the Latino community.
So, okay, so I'm going to hit a number of different angles here. And listeners, if you want to weigh in, you can do that. It's 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Or you can email us, connections@WXXI.org. I want to pull a couple of different themes here. First of all, on the subject of the fear of socialism, that generally speaking, and sometimes in very specific Latino communities, depending on where a person's heritage is from, there may be some concern about socialism. I'll ask all four of you. Anthony, I'll start with you. Does that suggest to you that, for example, we're not going to see, I don't think, the Republican Party move in the DSA direction, but if the Democrats do, does that imperil some of the support in potential Latino communities? Or is there a way to be a little bit more nuanced here, Anthony, because when you look at Florida this week, for example, Florida voted for Donald Trump and for a $15 minimum wage, which many Republicans say is socialism itself. So is there a nuanced way to look at this, or is that a sort of a landmine for the party if they want to kind of continue to bring in more Latino voters?
I think any successful party is going to have to look at each state, each county nuanced. And so how we approach Puerto Ricans and Latinos and Dominicans in New York State has got to be vastly different or specific to the community in other areas, maybe in Florida, Arizona. We're going to find out what that impact was and what were the issues there. Texas is going to provide us those opportunities as well. And so I think if you go at everything with the same hammer, right, and you paint the same broad brush against everything, you're going to find out that you're going to be looking at problems across the country, and you're not going to be reaching those voters, and you're not going to be connecting. But if you focus in on those issues and what are they saying at the local level, all politics is local, you're going to have a better time.
Okay. Mercedes, how does the maybe some of these debates that the Democrats will have in coming years, how does it augur for support in the Latino community?
Yeah, agreed with Anthony. I think once we start generalizing the Latino population, I think it's where you're going to have some major problems. You know, just here locally, the Latino community, we face quite a bit of challenges, particularly those that are concentrated in the inner city. We saw during the primaries where last minute, the election polls were changed, and here we are scrambling, trying to get the Latinos to a poll, only to find out that the only Latina candidate that was on the ballot was missing completely. So we've been dealing with quite a bit. We've seen it again with several housing developments like Keeler and Pinnacle, where there's a large Latino population. Those poll sites were pulled, and it leaves folks just questioning democracy. You know, the majority of the, you know, Latino voter protection started off because of the issues that we found during primaries. We've done everything. We've tried doing a grassroots effort to reach the Latino voter, caravans, phone banks, provided transportation, were on different radio, Latino radio programs, just trying to get the message out. So you'll see that, you know, nationwide we have an issue, but also locally we've had our share of issues when it comes to reaching the Latino voter.
Peter Vasquez, how do you see the conversation about sort of political policies that manifest economically and maybe how that's going to be received in Cuban-American communities, Puerto Rican communities, communities with strong immigrant populations from South or Central America?
Yeah. So, you know, Mercedes is right. Reaching the Latino community, I mean, even for me, just because I got an R behind my name has been almost impossible. And in many cases where I'm ridiculed or completely set apart within groups that I grew up with, which has always been interesting to me. But I want to go back to answer that question.
Peter, hold on. Before you answer that, can you tell us a little bit more? Who ridicules you and what does it sound like?
Specifically who, I guess doesn't really matter. Just, you know, over the years, I've been pretty actively publicly I've been active politically for the last 10 years.
Right.
And in those 10 years, I mean, I've been part of La Cumbre. I've been part of other organizations out there. And that party affiliation is always been pushed aside. And that's a fact. I mean, it's one of those Uncle Tom scenarios, I guess is the best way I could describe it, in various groups.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, if you want to add now to what you're responding to some of what Jose was saying, but go ahead.
Yeah, well, you know, I think the answer to your question is, Jose mentioned it earlier, is asking that question, why? You know, it is in our culture to be entrepreneurial. It is in our culture to be to focus on life, to not be pro-abortion. It is, and to be very faith-based. So it always had, you know, it's always confused me. Why is it that we have these values, but yet align politically with a completely opposite set of values? And I started asking those questions to my parents. Before my father died, he re-registered Republican because after several conversations and when I got active in politics, he kept asking me why I was a Republican. And I just pointed out his own values to him and said, Dad, this is what you raised me to be. And then fear. I think that politically the Hispanic community has been placed into fear for years. And I think one of the reasons why we see Latino cultures like the Cuban population kind of fight against that fear is because they lived it. They know what the suppression is really like, and they're leaving their countries. The same thing with Puerto Rico and the DR. I mean, these people are leaving their home countries not because they don't love their country or they don't love Puerto Rico. You know, you're a citizen there. Why would you want to leave? It's a beautiful country. However, all these places have very similar socialist lights of government, even in Puerto Rico, and that's why people are leaving that country in droves. I mean, they have been since my father left in the 70s.
Jose Pio, you want to add to that?
What Peter said was pretty spot on. I mean, even if you look on city council, there's two Latinos on there, and me and Miguel Melendez, and I don't want to say we couldn't be any different, but, I mean, he works for Ibero, and he's the community outreach. I'm a small business owner, investor in the finance field who grew up going to church three times a week. You know, it's just a different mindset and different, you know, where we grew up. I live in Charlotte, so I represent a lot of Latinos in Charlotte who are, a lot of them are business owners. And, you know, a lot of the people that he represents are more of the Clinton Avenue, who would never see me as one of them because I'm not Latino enough, you know, or my last name is not Latino enough. We're just so vastly different, even within our own communities, that as long as we get to the core needs that we need to address, which are taking care of each other and making sure that we have a better life for our children than we did for ourselves, I think we can attack it from different ways, and it doesn't matter if you have an R next to your name or a D next to your name. But unfortunately, we do live in a society right now where it does matter. And, you know, I would love to be able to break that wall down. But, you know, sometimes you got to play within the rules of the game and play within the realm in which you're playing. And, you know, at this point, we need to attack it in different ways, in my opinion.
Well, let me grab our first phone call. Yeah, go ahead, Peter.
I'm sorry. I just want, if I can, and Jose, I mean, I know all these guys we're talking to. You guys are all great. Jose, Miguel, you guys are phenomenal people doing great things. However, the statement that you made that we got to play within the rules,
that were given. And Evan, I believe that's the problem that we have, especially in the Hispanic community. Now, if I can, real quick, Trump saw an increase in minority support overall. The Latino support is almost pretty consistent throughout the years, but overall, he saw significant support within the minority groups. And I think that's important to point out, because when we play within the rules, then what we start doing is compromising. I mean, I grew up on Clinton Avenue. I've spent a lot of time in Shalott. I grew up in the inner city. But because we keep playing within the rules is the reason why things like the R and the D's behind someone's names is creating such an issue. Listen, I grew up poor. I know how all this – I know how to get out of that system, right? However, I get shunned because of my political affiliation, and now more so, to my surprise, to my religious stance, my faith stance, my strong faith stance, which is surprising to me because, again, the one thing that all Latino cultures – and I teach cross-culture communications at a local school. The one common denominator amongst all Latino cultures is faith and family and duty to country.
Right.
Well, I want to grab our first phone call, and this is John calling from Penyan, listening on Finger Lakes Public Radio. Go ahead, John.
Yeah, I'm from the Trimblesburg, but I'm driving to Penyan to count votes, or not count votes, but cure votes from the district election. I'm just wondering, I'm old enough to have seen the revolution in Cuba in 1959, when one of the worst dictators, most brutal dictators in Central America, in that area of the world, Fulgencio Batista, was overthrown by Castro. And I'm just wondering, there was an immense influx of Cubans that were supporters of the very fascist Fulgencio Batista in those years emigrate to America and populate in southern Florida. And I'm asking because I'm Amish. I mean, my ancestors were Amish. So I have no Latin blood in me whatsoever, but I'm curious to find out what people think about that background for the ultra-right wing, Trump-supporting Latinos and Latinas in southern Florida and their relation to the Batista immigration.
Okay. Thanks very much, John. Peter Vasquez, you want to start on that one?
Yeah, and I had trouble hearing him, Evan. If you can kind of just tell me what his question was, I'd appreciate it.
John, you want to ask a direct question so Peter can hear it?
I don't know why he couldn't understand. Is it distorted?
It's just a little muffled on my end.
Yeah, just try it one more time, John.
All right. I was just curious about what effect you think that I'm not Latino at all. Hertzler, it's an Amish name, the background, but I was curious about I watched the Castro revolution against one of the most brutal dictators, Fulgencio Batista, in the history of Cuba. And I was wondering, and there was a large immigration from Cuba, Batista supporters, to southern Florida when that all happened, and for several years after that. I was wondering, what effect do you think that immigration of ultra-right-wing former Batista supporters has had on the political situation among the Latinos in southern Florida?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Peter.
No, thank you, and thank you for clarifying that. So it has to have had a large influence, considering that a large and that probably pertains more to the older population of Cubans that were pretty staunch conservative. Now, I have to admit, I haven't studied Batista quite a bit, or usually the history of Cuba. I usually refer to my buddy and ask my questions directly. But simplistically and in my opinion, I would assume that played a huge influence in the older Cuban population of Cuba.
Okay. Anthony Plonzinski-Figueroa?
Absolutely, right? That group is coming over for a certain reason, and they're being levied to. In Florida right now, you know, the communism, the socialism aspect being pushed at them, why they left that country, are important.
And, you know, what I find is often when you approach the Latino community in a whole group, you lose that idea that you're talking specifically to those issues. And so I think the way a group was affiliated with or being treated with under a government, or the fear of what the new government was going to come in, is going to have a drastic effect on it. And I think that political parties who want to be successful, they play into that, I would say, PTSD of organizations and groups. And they're like, I don't want to return to that. And so therefore vote for us, because the other guy's going to make you do that.
Mercedes?
Agreed. I think there's an allegiance to that segment of Latinos, right? The privileges that were granted to the to them, so that there's a natural allegiance because of some of the things that were granted to that segment by the U.S. government.
Jose Pio.
Fear is a big motivator. I'll keep saying it until I die. Fear is a huge motivator, and unfortunately, it worked. And Trump really used it to his benefit.
We're going to take our only break of the hour, and we're coming back with Jose Pio, a member of Rochester City Council, Anthony Plancinski-Figueroa, founder of La Cumbre, Mercedes Vasquez-Simmons, who's a community organizer with the Latino Voter Protection Group, Peter Vasquez, a recent candidate for New York State Assembly. We're talking about understanding what we mean when we say the Latino vote, which is probably a little bit too broad of a term, and it misses some of the nuances in a very diverse set of voters and people and human experiences that, at least this election season, if you're going to look at it as a block, went more for Trump than 4 years ago. If that surprises you, we're peeling back some of the layers on that, and there's more to come after our only break. Coming up in our second hour, stories of people who are truly hurting in this economy, in this country, people working their way through recovery. We're also thinking about family members who have lost loved ones to addiction. A new photojournalism course explores how to tell stories of addiction and recovery. It's often tough for journalists. It's tough for family members, friends. We're going to discuss how to do it next time. I'm Evan Dawson. This is Connections, and I'm looking at Vox headline today from Matthew Iglesias. The headline, Trump's gains with Hispanic voters should prompt some progressive rethinking. I'm going to quote a couple of parts of this, and I want our guests to respond. Iglesias says that for a lot of progressive voters, there's confusion about how Trump could have improved from 2016 with Latino voters generally, considering they see so much racism. Here's what Iglesias writes. He writes, quote, over the past 5 years, many liberals have had occasion to refer to Trump's rhetoric and approach to immigration policy as racist. I've done it myself. Reasonable people can disagree about the details of immigration policy, but Trump's demagoguery on the subject, to me, reeks of irrational hostility to people of Latin American ancestry. And his broader musings about blank hole countries, frequent requests to get more immigrants from Norway, and demands that the congresswomen of color known as the Squad go back to where you came from, to me, again, reek of racism. But at a certain point, one has to admit that not all the people this racial animus is directed at see it as racist. End quote. That's from Matthew Iglesias. Jose Pio, what he's essentially saying is a lot of white liberals like to say, well, Trump's racist, and therefore the people he's directing that racism at aren't going to vote for him. And what he's saying is, I've got to humbly admit that there's plenty of Latinos who don't view it as racist. Do you view the president's remarks as consistently racist, Jose?
I'm saying it from my own point of view. I don't personally believe it's racist. It's probably, you know, along the lines of bias, prejudice. But when it comes down to it, I believe he's just a rich old white guy that says stupid things. It really, honestly, to me, comes down to that. And to me, I've seen a whole lot of white liberals who have been more racist to me than any Republican.
In what way? What's an example?
One example would be saying I should leave the state because I'm not welcome here. You know, that is along the lines of go back to where you came from. You know, if you're telling me to leave the state because I'm not welcome here because my ideas are not the same as yours, that's a problem to me. If you're telling me that, you know, there's a lot of Latinos out there that don't agree with me and I should, you know, stay in line, I'm not okay with that. I'm allowed to have my own point of view as a Latino male, as a male, as a man. I'm allowed to have my own point of view. So having me in a or pushing me into a box and requiring that I get in line with other people of color and other Latinos just because I don't agree with you as a white liberal, that's a problem to me. And you using that race issue shows your racism.
Mercedes, do you see the president as racist? And does some of the rhetoric that Matthew Iglesias brought up, does that strike you as racist?
I do see him as racist. I see that his conversations are very targeted. You know, if you look at how he's treating generally just comments he's made about Mexicans, making general statements. And if you look at the history, many of his properties are maintained and many of his employees are Latinos. Very insensitive. You know, he's, you know, here's the thing is I'm a boxing promoter by trade. So I've known Donald Trump due to the industry that I'm in. And I've seen it. He's been consistently this person that we see today where he degrades anyone that doesn't follow, you know, either his agenda and certainly looks down on the Latinos.
Hmm. Peter Vasquez, do you see it as racist? Are you on mute, Peter? Are you there?
Hey, sorry about that. I was on mute.
That's okay. Go ahead.
So I'm probably going to be on my own little island here on this call in regards to this answer. But no, I do not see it in the races. But you know what? I have refused my entire life to look at other people's responses to me or what I do as racist. However, there was one clear situation where the individual, or two actually, where the individual said to me, I don't want you dating my daughter because you are Hispanic. And interestingly, that was from a black family. And then in a local town where the municipality, what municipality said to me that they don't want my kind of. So I get it, and I know racism is real. However, I view Donald Trump the way Jose mentioned it. It's you know, he's just a rich old white guy who has been brash with his words his entire time that I've known of him, who just says things sometimes without thinking about it. But as far as being racist, no, I don't think I've ever known him to go out and say something specifically racial to somebody or racially intended. He is a bully. However, I don't see it as racist.
Okay, Anthony?
Donald Trump is racist. There is no other way to cut it. And he knows what, the other thing I will say is he's highly intelligent and he knows exactly what he's doing. And he understands that the racial fires, he is a media icon, whether you want to say it's positive or you want to say it's negative. He is a media icon. He understands media. He has been successful in the reality TV market. He knows what stokes and strokes people's emotions and he gets them going. And he understands that race sells. And so, therefore, he uses racial baiting to get people going. Donald Trump is a racist.
So,
Evan, can I jump in on that? I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'll let. Sure, we got time. Go ahead, Jose.
Biden has said some disgusting things about people of color. Disgusting things. Straight up saying racial jungles, and they're coming after his wife and his mom, and that we should lock them up in jail. All right, those are racist things. Comment. Trump saying that people coming from Mexico, a lot of them being, you know, child molesters or gangs or whatever like that, let's be honest, a lot of them are that. That doesn't mean that they all are that, just a lot of them are that. Now, when Biden says what he said, that's straight up racism. We just overlooked that because of our hatred for Trump, and that's not okay.
Peter,
absolutely. Can
yeah,
I Peter,
yeah, yeah, go ahead, Peter.
I appreciate that. And Jose, you're 100% correct on that. And I'm sorry, but, you know, I'll tell you, during the debates, Trump should have been more clear on his stance when asked if he would denounce racist organizations. And I think that would have helped clarify. But Jose, you know, hit it in the head. Yeah, but you see, I don't think that's the, see that. And I think that's the problem, Mercedes, with Trump is that when he speaks, and Anthony's right. He is a smart man. So what he says is definitely calculated. But when he speaks, he presents it in a way that just doesn't make sense to a lot of people. And I have that problem sometimes, too.
Yeah, unpresidential-like.
Okay. All right. So
unpresidential. So that's okay. I prefer good policies over a cool-looking president.
All right. So actually, in some ways, I think the panel, everyone speaking for themselves, is a good reminder to listeners that there is disagreement in the quote-unquote Latino community about just how much racism there is from this president. And if that surprises you, it's important for you to hear that and hear that sort of debate happening, because it's not monolithic. Now, one other question from me before I turn it over to listeners to close the hour. Matthew Iglesias points out one other issue. He pointed to Representative Ruben Gallego, who is a Democratic congressman from Arizona. He's a veteran. He's a working-class community Latino congressman. And Gallego was asked on Wednesday morning on Twitter by one of his followers and one of his constituents, you know, essentially the person said, I'm surprised at the president's performance with the Latino community. What can we do to better support the Latino community? But the person was saying the Latinx community. And Gallego says, Democrats can start by not using the term Latinx anymore. He says nobody in the Latino community actually uses it, apart from people who are in universities. And he goes on to say that Democrats actually have to meet Latinos where they are, try to actually care about how policy influences lives, and get involved on the ground level and stop doing the academic stuff and just drop the word Latinx entirely. That's from Congressman Gallego, Ruben Gallego in Arizona. Anthony Plonzinski-Figueroa, agree or disagree with him there?
I agree, and actually very liberal, progressive members of our community agree as well. I more often hear the term Latinx being used by those who are not Latino than they are Latino. It's almost as if they created the word, they have put the word on the community and have decided, we're going to use this, you should use this because it's gender neutral, and go ahead, use it now. It's the right thing to do. And everybody else in the community is like, when did this happen? And so I think that this is a pure example, a very good example of how things are promoted and projected onto a community without input from the community. Not saying that that we should not have conversations about the word and the label and how we use it and the implications and the reason why it has come about. But I don't necessarily see evidence that the community was involved. I mean, we're still having arguments about whether we should be labeled as Hispanic or Latino at this point. I have this conversation with my students every year. We haven't solved that debate. So this is a whole new one entirely, and I often find it's non-Latinos who are projecting it onto the Latino community.
Okay, Mercedes?
Yeah, I agree with that. I don't know where Latinx came from. It just all of a sudden it became a trendy word, and how they want to identify the Latino community. To Anthony's point, we're still dealing with being labeled Hispanics and to generalize groups. So, yeah, I'm absolutely in agreement with that. I don't know where that is, and I don't want to be categorized or even labeled as Latinx.
Jose Pio?
It was educated white liberals that are forcing their own words upon us. That's what it was. That's all it was. And I agree completely with the previous two in stating that no one asked me what I wanted to be called. I didn't think it was a problem. I don't care, but I'm also a male. Okay, you got to ask the female Latinas how they feel. And if they want to be called Latinx, cool. I'll call you Latinx. I don't care what you want to be called. I'm just going to, you know, I respect your opinion. Just like if you want to be called, I like to be called councilman instead of council member. I don't like the generalized term. So councilman, and some people like to be called council members. That's fine. I don't care. But ask. You know, ask if we care about that. And I personally, and my family, and my friends don't care.
Peter Vasquez.
Yeah, well, I've never liked labels. I find it interesting that it's only in the United States that we have Latinos and or Hispanics and Blacks. I mean, it's every other country, you're part of that country. I'd prefer we were all just called Americans. However, I do not like the term Latinx, and yes, that should definitely be dropped.
All right,
and I agree with Jose. Jose, you hit it on the head.
All right, let me squeeze a couple of phone calls in, and they're on similar subjects. So if my computer will work, I'm on the wrong mouse. Too many computers in front of me. I'm going to grab two in a row here, and we'll let our guests respond. Lisa in Rochester first. Go ahead, Lisa.
Hey, this is an interesting conversation. I'm not Hispanic or Latino. Now I'm not sure which to say. But anyway, the point is, what is it about Biden? He was vice president for 8 years. Where did he come off as a socialist? Where did this idea come from? I think it's a little bit of a straw man here, because Nobody wants socialism. Democrats don't want socialism. Are you referring to possibly Medicare for all,
yeah,
or that, you know,
it's policy,
is a
sure,
right?
Sure, it's policies like that, yeah.
Well, yeah. Okay. And, you know, and as far as I was listening to the family values, but I would say that kind of reaches across the board. I was born Catholic. I don't necessarily agree with abortion, but I would certainly never tell somebody they can or can't have one. I mean, women should have. I think I'm just confused by a lot. I mean, as somebody who's Hispanic, I can't imagine what they liked about Trump.
Well, that's what we're trying. Yeah, Lisa, I appreciate that. That's what we're trying to help people see this hour. And before we get response on her confusion about socialism, let me just say before I grab John's phone call, it's on the same subject. You know, I'm not saying Medicare for all is inherently going to create a socialistic society, but there's plenty of messaging out there, and it's very powerful in certain communities. And I think that's what John's kind of point is here. Let me grab John and Webster. Keep it tight, John. Go ahead.
Hi, Evan. I hope you're doing well. Yesterday's show and today's show are very, very, very good. On the use of socialism and communism, I cringe when I hear people talking about socialism because very, very few people have studied it. I taught a class on socialism in philosophy years ago, and I used a very good book, A Short History of Socialism by George Lichtenstein. But I want to look at the medical point that the previous caller was talking about. People say England, United Kingdom, has socialized medicine, as does several countries in Europe. There are more people in the United States on Medicare and Medicaid than there are people in England. But we don't call Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security socialism.
Yeah, and John, I got to jump in here because we're going to run out of time, and I want our guests to have time to respond here. So about 45 seconds apiece, if you can keep it moving. Peter Vasquez, let me start with you. What do you make of these calls and the confusion about, well, that's not socialism, or we're misunderstanding socialism? Go ahead.
Yeah, absolutely. And to the callers, thank you for calling in. But to Lisa's point, I want to clarify. The feel or the concept that because one is black or brown, right, needs government help, or this concept that government has to step in to help people on a regular basis is just ludicrous to me, especially in the black and brown community. To me, it's just short of modern-day slavery. Anything that prevents individual growth, individual responsibility is socialism, and that's what's happening, and we see it right here in Rochester in our urban center and urban centers throughout. We even see it in places like Puerto Rico and the Dominican Republic and in Cuba.
All right, Anthony, go ahead.
I think it's about the definition. I think if you were to talk to the Biden camp in the primary, they would have loved for people to confuse them and think that they were more socialist because the progressive wing of the party would have been siding with them. They come to the general election and they're being labeled with it. And so I think voter education and voter information is crucial, and the messaging that's getting to them is important. And so I think the definition of socialism in the primary and the definition of socialism in the general election are two vastly different things, but we don't get to the bottom of it because we're arguing over what the superficial meaning is.
Mm-hmm. Jose?
Oh, man. Lisa and John, thank you very much for the question. I think we're missing a little bit of the point there, too, because we're only talking about the socialism aspect. We're missing the part about why people wouldn't vote for Biden. And really quickly, many people think that he should not be going around smelling little kids. It's weird. A lot of Latinos actually enjoy looking up to a strong, brash, white, rich leader versus someone who's been in you know, political realm for so long and done nothing for them in particular. Those are other aspects to it. Obviously, the socialism thing is one thing, but you're missing the other parts. And that's just a lot of people just didn't look at Biden and say, I really can't wait to go vote for him. Most people were just like, I really can't wait to go vote against Trump. Mm-hmm.
Let me give the last 45 seconds to Mercedes. Go ahead.
Right. And the socialism means so many things to different to within our demographic, right, which is, as you can see, it varies from Latino nationality. But, you know, when you're asking a Latino primarily, you know, what are your motivators to vote? We talked a little bit about the, you know, how public health was handled, the outbreak, foreign policy. We have the same fundamental reasons why we're voting. But again, we'll go back to socialism, such a broad comment and statement, and it means different to different demographics within the Latino community.
Our listeners, so many phone calls and emails, and I see that we are scratching the surface of a subject that we're going to need to return to in very different and I hope more penetrating ways as the weeks and months to come. And I'm really grateful for the time. Mercedes Vasquez-Simmons, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
Anthony Plaszynski-Figueroa, always good. Thank you.
Thank you.
Very much appreciate your time, Peter Vasquez. You're generous with it. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Jose Pio, same. Thank you, Jose.
I appreciate you, brother. Thank you.
Just brief update, listeners. You're going to hear it from NPR coming up here. Nevada is counting. We said at the outset of the hour that they could be releasing full votes. They haven't. The Nevada votes have slightly increased Joe Biden's lead there. Not enough for a call, but so far the news is better for Democrats than Republicans in that state. We'll see hour by hour what changes, and more connections coming up.